It's 24 minutes after the hour. It's Tuesday morning, and that means Dr. Don Clark joining us from Garden Valley, Texas, where he has a grape ranch out there and makes some wonderful wines. He's got a history in biochemistry and pharmaceuticals. He's a member of the Board of Creation Moments and a delight to share airtime with here. He joins us just about every Tuesday morning. Don, good morning. How are things out Garden Valley way today?
Oh, everything is fine. We got a bright, beautiful, crisp morning
crisp
today here.
Crisp, he says crisp.
Crisp.
Well,
crisp.
We're not talking crisp mornings this morning. We're not talking wheat thins or Triscuits or potato chips. We're talking CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R. I misspelled it in the chat window. By the way, if anybody is listening and would like to kind of read the article along with us here as we get into it, the link is in the chat window at BrokenRoadRadio.com. It has to do with a Breakpoint program that we aired here yesterday, and we've isolated the article. And, Don, I think of things like... Well, I was thinking of the book by H.G. Wells, Dr. Moreau, which was back in the 1890s, and it expressed fear and horror at mixing what was about a doctor on a mysterious island where the guy was shipwrecked, and he's creating new beings, hybrids of between humans and animals. And it was done by vivisection then. They didn't know about DNA in the 1890s. I was mentioning that to David, and he brought up Mengele and the Nazis and the experiments they were doing in the 30s. Mm. This is not unbroken ground, is it, except in the fact that we have this technology called CRISPR. Tell us about CRISPR.
Well, CRISPR is, what does CRISPR stand for? It's clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats.
Can you say that five times fast?
That's what it stands for. It was originally discovered in prokaryotic cells, apparently... Naturally, it's involved in the antiviral system for bacteria and other prokaryotes.
What's a prokaryote?
Oh, it's a cell that does not. I mean, it's an organism in this case, like a bacteria that does not have a nucleus.
Huh.
Okay. So the DNA is in the protoplasm, as opposed having a nuclear cell wall.
Oh, really? Okay.
We have eukaryotic cells. So our DNA is in a nucleus inside the cell. So our cells are called eukaryote. Bacteria cells are called prokaryote, and other cells like bacteria, of course. This was found in prokaryotic cells, repeating units. And interesting thing about CRISPR, it's a multi-component enzymatic system, if you will. There's a messenger RNA segment or a couple of segments, and then that attaches to a protein. And the protein is the endonuclease, and all that means is it cuts in the middle of a DNA segment.
So it's a technology, but it's a tool. How's it used?
It's become a tool, and some gals recently won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry, actually as of this year. Emanuela Carpenter and Jennifer Doudna won the Nobel Prize for their work in this area, and their work was on CRISPR-Cas9, and that's just a different CRISPR system, the Cas9 gene, and what they did is basically said, if we take the RNA section of that and pre-program the RNA section, then it will probably stick to different parts in the DNA. And so the RNA section is called the guide RNA.
It's the instruction manual for a cell. Could you look at it that way?
No, it's the sticky part of the CRISPR. So if you change that, then you can basically say, I want to cut the DNA here, and all you need to do is design the little RNA sections to stick to that part of the DNA, and then your Cas9 protein, then the enzyme cuts it at that spot. So that was their contribution, and it opened up a whole new field of potentially genetic engineering, because now you had a way of selectively cutting the DNA at certain points as opposed to only predefined points of the original CRISPR complex, if you will. So this was a great discovery in molecular biology and biochemistry, and their result was, okay, they got the Nobel Prize, but people then said, wow, okay, if we have this technology, then we can redesign our DNA. We can do whatever we want. We can cut out, let's say, non-functioning or mutated areas of DNA that's causing a particular disease, and then we can put in new genes that don't have the mutation, and voila, you got a new organism that doesn't have disease.
Voila, and everybody applauds. They have a quote here from the Secretary General of the Swedish Royal Academy of Science. And he says, this year's prize, referring to the Nobel Prize for Chemistry for these two ladies, is about rewriting the code of life. Hooray.
Right. So the first question we need to ask, should we be doing that?
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, with any technology, you've got some great points. This is a fantastic technology that, you know, we could use to actually figure out, you know, what different genes do within our own genome or within animal genomes or whatever. And so we can get more information that way. But to jump all the way to, oh, let's just make some superhumans, it's a bit of a stretch from where we are today, fortunately. But two, should we even be doing that at all? In my opinion, no, we should not be doing it. Unfortunately, this technology is so new that there's not a whole lot of regulatory aspects to this yet, or there's not even ethical bodies that you review your research and says, yes, this is okay to do in embryos, for example. And of course, we had the case in China where they were experimenting with embryos and doing the cloning
using CRISPR.
I don't think they were using CRISPR, but in England they use CRISPR on 8 embryos. I think it's in the article somewhere. Some of them didn't turn out too well. Of course, they destroyed the embryos at that point. But it brings up a religious, a religious question for me, at least. Should you even be experimenting with embryos? Because, once you have an embryo, the DNA has merged, and now you have the potential for life if, that gets implanted.
Does this have something to do with stem cells? Are the two things tied together?
No, that's okay. Different technology. This is actually gene editing. You're cutting out pieces of the DNA. Mm-hmm. And you're putting in other pieces, other segments to either correct a disease or correct some type of genetic flaw, or perhaps even enhancing certain aspects of ourselves, if you will, depending on what the gene is actually doing. So it's quite dangerous technology from the point of view of if we start doing this, and it's remarkable that, okay, so this technology is discovered, And here we have people already trying it with human embryos. I mean, that's unconscionable. I mean, you should, if you're going to do any experiments, shouldn't you at least do it on, you know, non-humans first, instead of, you know, jumping right in and doing this in, on.
Is it scientific curiosity? It's like opportunism. It's like, oh, we can do something really big with this. Or is it, are dollars affected? Wealth, power, are they connected to all this? I mean, a company, for example, that perfects the technique and uses it to provide a service for whoever they might provide the service to, can become a very, it's a huge advantage for them having this technology and I say perfecting in quotes, because here's a quote from one genetics researcher in the article. It says, you're affecting so much of the DNA around the gene you're trying to edit that you could be inadvertently affecting other genes and causing problems. So we don't know how risky this is.
No, we don't. And to, like I said, to jump right in. And this was this research was done at the Francis Crick Institute in London. I found the section in the mm-hmm. article that says that they edited 18 donated human embryos. They had quite a number of those embryos not turn out so well. Of course, they didn't report on that so much. Because there were major, as they say, major unintended edits. Now, when you do anything in biochemistry and molecular biology, and when you're down at the molecular level, it's not like you're going in with a scalpel and you're cutting out this specific piece. Because if you say, okay, I want to cut out that piece, and you design the RNA, in this case, to stick to that particular section, it's going to also stick to other sections, and there may be other DNA sequences that are similar to the complement of your RNA that you've created that it also sticks to. And so instead of just cutting out that one little section of DNA, you may cut it at multiple locations, and you don't know, you know, what the end result of that is going to be. And the DNA molecule is so complex. For example, our DNA, our genome, is 3 billion base pairs long. And so when you're trying to cut it at one of the 3 billion base pairs, you can see that, well, that might not, you know, happen so well, because the DNA is so complex. One, we've got 23 chromosomes, and before you can do anything with the DNA, you've got to unravel it, and there's all kinds of proteins around the DNA.
You say it's not like a surgeon working with a scalpel, but how do they do it? Is it they look through an electron microscope? Are they seeing visually what they're trying to do, or is it strictly a chemical process?
Well, it's a chemical biochemical process. I mean, it's you can think of enzymes as catalysts, because they catalyze particular reactions. So it's like you have a the chemicals in a jar, and you're trying to form a certain chemical reaction. You always get side reactions,
So you're fine tuning chemistry and putting it to work on something you can't see physically. Is that
you can't see it?
Okay,
no, not at all. No. And this is done inside the cell, by the way. It's done, so you've got all the mechanisms inside the cell, and you're injecting this this CRISPR inside the cell, and then you're hoping for the best.
Yeah.
You're saying, well, I've designed this to stick at this particular part on the DNA, and you're leaving the work, if you will, up to the regular mechanism of the cell to do its job, and away you go, and you hope for the best.
So not a surgeon with a scalpel, more like a lumberjack with a sledgehammer.
Right. I mean, this is not...
Not fine work.
Finely tuned. Now, you know, if you do enough research, you may be able to direct it more carefully, for example. But still, you know, we're not talking about small molecules here. We're talking about gigantic molecules that are, you know, like I said, our DNA is 3 billion base pairs long, and we're trying to manipulate that. We're trying to go in and, you know, attack a specific chromosome that has the specific gene that we're interested in, and then either clipping that gene out, or at least clipping a short segment out, and then repairing, if you will, you know, the DNA in that short.
Okay, so you might be doing it to cure a disease or a congenital deformity, or you might be intending to do good with this. But let's turn this into a hypothetical. CRISPR is now perfected. You get exactly the results you want every time. It's still in the hands of human beings. Then what are the risks?
Well, then, you know, we can think of all kinds of things to do. And if a little bit is good, why not make a lot of it? And now we are manipulating our DNA to go back to your reference to Germany, for example, the experiments that were happening in Germany to make the the superhuman, the Aryan race. You know, just think of that multiplied by 10,000 or 100,000. Now we're trying to make the perfect man. Well, the perfect man's already been on Earth. So to try to go back and make the perfect man is disturbing, you know, at best. But leads us to some very, very difficult biblical questions and consequences, by the way. So, and I'll bring you back to chapter 6 of Genesis, where it says the sons of man came into the daughters, saw that the daughters of man were, you know, attractive and everything and desirable, and so they came and basically had offspring with them. Well, the sons of man, you can argue, well, that was the sons of Seth, and there is some argument for that, not much, but really referring to angels that have come down, left their domain, as it says in other parts of Scripture, and came and had sex with man, or with woman in this case, to produce offspring that became known as the giants of old. So the problem with that now is that the angels caused a genetic modification to the human gene, which produced giants, and giants with, you know, superhuman abilities. And then, of course, they began to rule over man. And that was one of the reasons for the flood and for wiping out these hybrids, if you will, of angels and man to bring back the original intent God had designed, which was that it was man and not the hybrid angel-man that was supposed to live here on Earth. This is our domain. The angels have their domain, and we were intended to stay in our domain. The angels were intended to stay in their domain. But when you had that crossover, then you had this hybrid that God needed to deal with. And the hybrid that you can argue, but one argument is that hybrid came through the flood in one of Noah's sons' wives, for example. And then you had the giants, which David took care of one giant, we know of Goliath, but there was a tribe in the Middle East that produced these giants, and there apparently were five of them, because Goliath had four other brothers. And so David took care of Goliath, and you know, eventually they got wiped out, and the human bloodline, or in this case, the human DNA line, was now pure once again, with only human DNA and not a cross-contaminant. Well, you can think of the same thing. That's what these experiments are all about, is changing our DNA in such a way that ultimately, the ultimate, even though it's not stated in the article, but man being who he is, he wants to make things better. And so the ultimate goal is we want to make a superhuman race. And that race then, you know, we can make that race in charge of all of humans. And that way we can all live happily ever after, unless you happen to be suppressed by the superhumans. So all of that's going to lead to some really bad stuff, as it did back in the days of Noah. And God will have to deal with that,
in the 1930s, for that matter. It's the same impetus. It fascinates me how this ties with politics and economics as well. Marx's communist philosophy would work. In fact, I had a college economic professor tell me it was the ideal, the best possible economic system on Earth, and we should all follow it. Well, if man were perfect and thoroughly good inside and out, it may well work that way. But man isn't. Now you're talking about a scientific tool in the hands of the same fallen man with the same kind of outcome. It inevitably leads to catastrophe. In the case of economics, it leads to totalitarianism. It brought about a Napoleon who was called by some the Antichrist. That's the end result of a communist system, of a socialist system. If science becomes the power, the god of the culture, and is still run by fallen man, the threat is even worse.
Oh, yes, the threat is, of course, and that is the problem. Man is fallen. I mean, you know, Adam and Eve did eat of the forbidden fruit, and that allowed Satan to come into the world and to have his way, and he's still here. So until Satan is taken care of, which our Lord Jesus Christ will do, you know, at the end of this particular age that we're in, and then Jesus will rule and reign on earth, and Satan and his cronies are no longer around to torment us and to give thoughts to man for doing evil. Then we will have a time of peace on earth, because the Messiah will be ruling and reigning, and of course we will be, his followers will be ruling and reigning with him, and that will bring peace on earth. But until that time comes, there will be no peace on earth, regardless of man's good intentions. They always seem to ultimately lead to poor intentions and bad intentions after a while, because of man's heart is evil.
Well, evil is a force, a very real force in our lives. And it's interesting that you can take several roads as the human race and all wind up at the same place, which is where Revelation says we're headed. And it's fascinating, and these are interesting times. CRISPR, I won't even tell you what that means. What does that mean again? Let's see.
Okay, one more time.
Okay. Buddy, write this down now.
Okay, it is a clustered regular interspace short palindromic repeats.
Okay. Well, let's just say it's not a good deal, okay? It's going to go wrong. Don't get too excited about it.
Yeah, it like any technology, it can be used for good or it can be used for not so good. And there's always unintentional consequences, even when you're trying to use it for good.
And there have been some experiments with it that have gone wrong, and they tend not to get headlines. They don't get coverage. So, yeah, be aware, be alert. Don, thanks very much for the time. Don, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, I want to mention their website to you, creationmoments.com. There you will find an archive, a valuable resource of biblical scientific information talking about the biblical account of creation. It's worthwhile to spend some time there, creationmoments.com. Don, we will talk to you next Tuesday, okay?
Okay, sounds good. See you then.
Bye-bye.
See you, Don.
So long.